I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Brian Castle. Brian left his job to launch a successful career as a freelance web designer. He transitioned out of freelancing and into products businesses. Brian built and grew a SaaS company, which he sold for a six-figure exit. He built a productized service company with an awesome distributed team and some amazing clients. Brian launched an educational course and community with hundreds of members. Systematically, Brian has removed himself from the day-to-day service tasks so he can focus on the bigger picture. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. I wonder if we could start off by you talking a little bit about why you pursued the path that you did.
Yeah, sure. So, it's interesting because I think that question of why and you know, what am I trying to do? What are my big goals? Or, you know, what I want to do for a living and all this. I feel like that the answer to that question has always been evolving for me. You know, I guess looking way back, you know, many years, a lot of people like to talk about like, oh, I've always had the dream of becoming a business owner one day or being an entrepreneur. And I to be honest, I didn't exactly have that dream. Like when I was a kid, I wanted to be a baseball player and then I wanted to be a rock star. And I actually thought I was going to get into the music industry for a while there. But, you know, then I kind of started out as a freelance web designer in my professional career. And then I kind of thought that was it. I thought I was just going to be a creative designer, developer, creating websites for clients. But then over time, you know, I learned between running that business that there are reasons why I wanted to transition to something more scalable. I became attracted to building products. And then over time, through a lot of trial and error and learning things the hard way, I kind of stumbled into this idea of building productized services, which are kind of a combination between building a purely product, like software type product with some sort of done for you service element. So I got really excited about that. And I've actually found that to be a really great way to launch and gain traction and actually grow a business. And that's what I've been kind of focused on these past few years. So I kind of went from, you know, being more on the creative side into being more entrepreneurial and that sort of mindset. And that's kind of how I see myself today. These past few years, I became really excited and really focused about this idea of building systems in every aspect of my business, from sales and marketing, but also into the delivery of the service itself, and really to a point where the service is a product that runs systematically and predictably. And so I've been focused on building that now in my second business, doing a productized service type of business. So that's what I've been kind of focused on lately, and that's kind of where I see myself going forward is building out these things can grow scalably. I don't even know if that's a word, but you know, grow in a scalable way.
Sounds good to me.
so that I, you know, I'm not stuck kind of trading hours for dollars. That's really kind of what I've been focused on these past few years.
Is there anything in particular, anything that is kind of a thread through all this for you? About because what you're describing is actually very different skill sets, right? So developing websites or being a musician, as an example, they're like there's a creative skill that's needed to produce a result for somebody else. And when you're talking about like designing systems and leading teams, that's like totally different.
Yeah, you know what? They are totally different when you look at it from, you know, like a bird's eye perspective, I think, but. What I've noticed over time, you know, throughout my career now is every phase of my career, I've been able to leverage something from the previous phase to bring me into the next thing. So, for example, with music, you know, I mean, I've always had that kind of creative side of what I did since I was a kid. But as I got into college, I became very excited about the technological side of the music business. So I was getting into like recording and music production and audio engineering. But then that led into web design, because that's also a very technical, it kind of combines that design and technical aspect. I mean, web design was also the first paying full-time job that I had after college. But then, you know, moving fast forward a few years from that, I mean, into becoming a freelance web designer, that's when I started to kind of cut my teeth on how to work with my own clients and how to structure a contract and how to send invoices and all that sort of fun stuff. But then once I became interested in products, the very first products that I built were WordPress themes, or essentially web design templates. So I was taking my web design skills and I was applying those to build web design products. And then eventually I got into building Restaurant Engine, which was also a web design related SaaS slash productized service business that was doing web designs, websites for restaurants. And I built up that over the course of about 4 years, eventually sold that business. And then now, as we fast forward into what I'm doing today, a business called Audience Ops, where we do content marketing. It's another productized service business, a very focused, done-for-you content marketing service for software founders. You can look at that and say, well, that's pretty disconnected from everything before. But actually, if you look closer, in Restaurant Engine, I built up that business using content marketing. So I had built up a team of writers and systems and guidelines for us to, you know, churn out blog posts and newsletters and email marketing. And that's essentially how we grew all the traffic and all the leads and customers for Restaurant Engine. And so then I started talking about how I did that, and other entrepreneurs that I've known and networked with, you know, became interested in learning how I was able to build up content marketing in a way that didn't require me to be the one writing all the blog posts. So when I, at the time I exited Restaurant Engine and I was looking to start a new business, this idea of solving that problem for other entrepreneurs who know that they need to do content marketing, but they don't have the systems and the mechanics and the resources and a team in place to do all that. That became, and that happened to be an area that I had spent years figuring out on my own. I thought I could build a business out of this. So I was kind of like leveraging the one business into the next one. And then as I look at the productized course that I teach, I've been teaching that for almost a year and a half now. I'm really just kind of teaching the things that I've learned in building these businesses, and also talking to other business owners. So I like to kind of, you know, leverage the byproducts of what I'm working on to try to add some more value.
So there've been systems and leverage all along the way, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now let's get into the nitty gritty. You mentioned this issue of trading time for dollars. It's a big issue for people who are delivering professional services, whether it's in a, you know, someone as a freelancer or solopreneur, or somebody in a company. If the business model is trading time for dollars, then how do you create leverage? And in particular, how do you get out of this feeling like the business is running you instead of you running the business? Because often that's what it feels like when you're trading time for dollars. And,
sure.
And I've seen people who are in companies that have, you know, dozens of people who feel like they're just like chasing their tails all the time.
Yeah. You know, I think this idea of trading hours for dollars, you know, billable hours, that in itself is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, there are definitely things that can be frustrating about it. I mean, if you're a solo consultant or a solo freelancer and you're charging by the hour, obviously you're limited by the number of hours in the day. And yes, over time you can start to raise your hourly rate, and that can help you kind of like make more money. But then at a certain level, you are going to hit some sort of ceiling. You can't just continuously increase that rate indefinitely without, you know, pricing yourself out of a market and that sort of thing. So there is that sense of limitation there. But I think that it goes a little bit deeper than that. At least what I experienced when I was, you know, working as a freelancer, kind of living project to project, I started to feel like I wanted to take on more responsibility and I wanted to do bigger things and get into being an actual business owner rather than being the technician, you know, the one coding the website or designing the mock-up in Photoshop or whatever it was. I wanted to get into bigger and more interesting, even more challenging things. You know, the other thing that I like to think a lot about here is, you know, with billable hours or really any sort of agency model or consulting, it's so easy to fall into that kind of a trap where you're serving anyone and everyone. Yeah. So I was, as a freelance web designer, I'd get requests and I'd get referrals from all sorts of people in my network who would then, you know, who would ask for website projects. Sometimes it'd be an e-commerce site. Sometimes it would be a site for a university. Sometimes it would be a site for a doctor or a membership application, or they need help with emails or mobile websites. Like, I was doing all these different things for all different types of clients. And what I found was that's a great way to just fill up your calendar with billable hours, and you can make a comfortable living that way, but you can't actually grow that business. You can't say, okay, next month I'm going to double the amount of business we're doing. I'm going to step on the gas and just go out and get more clients, because you don't know who your clients are. Your clients are everyone. So once I started to learn about, you know, really focusing in on one target ideal customer who is the most ideal person that you can solve a very painful problem for, and then do that repeatedly for more and more people who have that same problem. That's what really helped me realize that, you know, that's how you can scale a business and have something that you can market and actively get out there and get yourself in front of more of that type of person.
Talk to me a little bit more about this idea of why you have to have a fairly narrow niche in order to scale.
Yeah, sure. So there are a few different ways that you can look at this, this question of niche, because in one way you can look at, okay, I'm only going to serve a certain industry vertical. And that's kind of what I did in my first business, Restaurant Engine, where we were only serving restaurants, right? And that is a certainly valid, and it's an easy way to find a very focused audience, a focused market, and find ways to get yourself in front of them and develop a product, a solution for that audience. But another way that I like to think about it is just solving one particular problem, right? And that's kind of what we're doing in my current business, Audience Ops. You know, we're not necessarily serving one niche vertical or one industry, but we are only serving clients who share the same problem, which is they need help with content marketing, or they don't have the resources in-house, and they do sell to an online business audience. That's how we kind of define our ideal customer today. And so we have customers who are selling, you know, SaaS software. Some of them sell downloadable software. Some of them are digital agencies. So they have things in common, but they're not so focused into one particular industry. But the one main thing that they have in common is that they all highly value content marketing. They know they need to be doing it, or they have been doing it, but now they need resources behind it. And they see our service as a value proposition that offers better value than hiring a full-time employee in-house. And so I'm not saying this to try to, you know, plug our business or anything. It's really about identifying a focused value proposition that one type of customer can really identify with. So the moment that they identify with that problem, they're saying, yes, like, this is exactly what I've needed. I just, you know, was never able to, you know, describe it. That's kind of what you're going for when it comes to nailing down the value proposition for a particular niche or audience.
And how is it that you're able to scale your business if you're solving that one particular kind of problem in a way that you can't if you are serving everybody?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're serving everybody, like I used to do as a freelance web designer, you're doing everything and anything, and all those different projects that you're doing for different people, you're executing on those problems in different ways, using different methods, using different tools, using different processes, different strategies. You know, so when you're doing everything in different ways, it's nearly impossible to form any sort of system or standard way of doing things. And without that, it's a really, really big challenge to start to delegate some of those things to a team. And so once you identify the single problem that you're solving and who you're solving it for, and then once you identify the solution, so the best possible solution that you can come up with to solve that particular problem, then you can start to develop the best way of implementing that solution. So even if there are 10 different ways to do, to create a website or to do content marketing or to do accounting, you know, you can come up with the best way to do it, and then build a system and a process for doing that, and then bring in people to kind of take over certain roles within that process. So then you, as the founder, you're focused on just building the system and the process and, you know, sales and marketing, getting yourself in front of those customers. But then the actual delivery of the service can be executed by your team. It can also be executed with the help of software and a combination of these things to really make an efficient business that kind of runs like a machine. And then it's just a matter of adding volume to it, both in terms of leads and customers, but also your team and the things that kind of power your service.
And what was it in your own personal evolution that helped you realize that focusing on this one particular problem would help you to scale and help you to create a bigger business?
Yeah, I guess it goes back to when I was building Restaurant Engine. Again, before that, I was doing freelance website projects for all these different clients. When I started Restaurant Engine, I knew that we had to build this platform for one particular industry. And the reason for that, and at this point, in this early stage, I had not even settled on restaurants as the industry that I was going to go after. All I knew was I wanted to build a hosted web design service for one niche. And the reason for that was that I knew that every website that we did would have the same set of features, because that same niche audience would all have the same requirements. If I was building this thing for everyone, then some clients would need e-commerce, and some clients would need a blog, and some clients would need a portfolio, and they would need all these different things. But if I settled on one niche industry and I eventually decided on restaurants, then I realized, okay, well, every restaurant site needs a menu, a food menu. Every restaurant site needs a photo gallery. Everyone needs to show their hours of operation. And so this standard set of features were things that we can build into our templates for them. And then as that business started to grow and I started to hire customer support reps and even sales reps for that, then that also became easier, because we're answering the same questions and they have the same requirements, and we did, you know, done for you website setups. So my team followed the same process every single time. And that's actually what allowed us to set up a brand new website for a restaurant in like 2 or 3 days. Whereas if you hire a web designer to do it, it takes usually months. So, you know, when you have that standard process, you're able to, you know, really streamline it and really scale it up. That was the vision on that one. And then, you know, I kind of took that same methodology into my current business, Audience Ops, where, you know, we're doing content marketing, which means we're writing blog posts, we're writing email newsletters and email courses for our clients. But that's basically all we do. I mean, we do a number of things within that. So we'll help to promote the content, and we do research into the topics, and we write these articles, and we draft them, we create graphics for them and whatnot. But that all follows our standard production line for drafting and publishing articles on behalf of our clients. So, you know, again, we just try to focus on solving one problem, solving it in one way for one ideal customer, and then kind of scaling things up from there.
Brian, if solving that one problem is really the critical component to being able to scale, and if you don't really know or you're not sure whether you've identified that one problem, what can you ask yourself to help you identify what that one problem is and how to make it narrow enough?
Yeah, and I think this is an ongoing evolution. I mean, I see this in my own business, you know, going back years, where every time a certain request comes up from a client, I always question internally whether or not this is something that we should say yes to. Like, should we do this special request that they're asking? And today, the way that I look at this question, it's okay, well, if we are to do it for this client, is this something that would actually benefit all of our clients? Is this something that we should start to roll into our standard process for our clients? And if it's not, if it's kind of a deviation from the problem that we solve, then chances are I'm probably going to say no to that client, you know, obviously in a respectful way. It's just say, well, it's not really something that we do. I can give you a few recommendations on how you can get that thing done. Or I might have a discussion around like, well, why are you making that request? How does this fit into the bigger picture? You know, that sort of thing. Or it's a request that, you know, that would actually make a lot of sense. And actually I've heard that request once or twice from other clients. So maybe we should start to build out a system or a process to bring this into our standard process. And we've done that as well in Audience Ops. So yeah, that's, you know, because if I look back years ago when I was doing freelance web design work for all these different clients, I had all sorts of requests. And what would happen is you get into this, but everyone who does freelance work knows what I'm talking about here, which is, you know, just I just want one more thing, one more request, you know, and it adds time, it adds dollars to the scope, and sometimes that's fine, you know, you should be billing for that extra work, but it also takes you away from that goal of building this standard machine-like business, because every special request then needs to be carried out, and it's probably not something that you can just simply delegate, because it's not something that's done on a repetitive basis.
How do you find that first one problem? If initially your business is fairly broad and you're doing too many things for too many people, how do you identify that one problem that is going to be the key to your scaling?
Yeah, so I think identifying that one problem, there are a few things that you should be thinking about here. It has to be so painful that the person is willing to pay money to have it solved. And that's why I generally really prefer working with businesses, you know, B2B rather than consumers. I've never really sold anything to consumers, really. So I think that's a totally different value proposition there. But with business owners, you know, they're really looking at products and services as well. Will this help me make more money, or will it help me save time, or, you know, some combination of those things? So that's the number one thing that I'm looking at.
Identify
the pain. And that pain should be related to something that's valuable to them in dollars. Like, is it going to help them make more money, you know, increase revenue, or, you know, save some cost in some way? But the other thing that I like to look at, you know, because you'll hear that advice everywhere, you know, find the pain, solve a painful problem. And that is so important. But I think for each individual person, you need to focus on, okay, what are you best positioned to solve? What is the problem that you have some unique advantage, some unique insight, some unique experience that makes you better qualified to solve this problem than anyone else? And I think that the answer to that question is different for everybody. You can look to your current experience or your previous experience in a job or a previous business, and use whatever intelligence that you can gather from that experience to inform the problem area and who would pay money to have that problem solved. You know, again, in my experience with Audience Ops, you know, if I was just starting this business out of the blue today, you know, a done for you content marketing service, I mean, I would have no idea, you know, or if this was me a few years back, I would have no idea where to start with that, you know. But now, based on my experience in these past few years, you know, I've built up my own email list and audience and audience over the years, and that's allowed me to, you know, sell products and that sort of stuff. I used content marketing to build up my own SaaS, so I had these unique insights that I've learned the hard way over many years of trial and error. So now I'm you know, well positioned to build these strategies and build a team and build a process around solving that problem. So I think that I think everybody has some unique insight or some experience that they can look to identify a certain problem that they can solve.
We're all unique individuals. So yes, I can't imagine why we wouldn't be able to find something that is unique and differentiates us from everybody else.
Yeah, well, I'd actually just add one more thing to that. I mean, the other thing, and I've fallen into this trap myself so many times, is like trying to find something that's so unique or like inventing some new technology or some new innovation. I thought that that was a requirement for starting a startup. And what I learned in these past few years is that's not the case at all. In fact, I'm always wary of an idea that's so unique, that's such a one of a kind, you know, because my first worry there would be, well, maybe nobody's doing this because there's nobody willing to pay for it, or yeah, it's not a painful enough problem. So I think it's certainly fine to work on a problem that other people are solving, but you can solve it in your own way, and you can, you know, have your own you know, unique way of solving it.
Yeah, usually it's like a small pivot.
Yeah, exactly.
On stuff other people have already done.
Yep.
Brian, who has been influential for you in your own career development?
Yeah, this is it's a really tough question, because I like to read and follow a lot of people, and especially, you know, especially the people that I've been meeting. I would say the one, I'll name a few names in a second, but the one blanket response to this would just be, I think personally, the people who have influenced me more are the people who I've met in person in these last couple of years, especially the people who I've become friends with. I'm in a really great mastermind group that I meet with every week. I've been in other mastermind groups. I attend conferences. I try to meet up with people when I'm traveling around, and just to kind of pick their brains and to hear and follow what they're working on, I always find, you know, really inspiring. I tune into a ton of different podcasts and kind of just, you know, tune in to what people are working on. That kind of stuff inspires me and influences me. But just a few names that I've been, you know, a big fan of over the years. I mean, Seth Godin, I like to read his stuff every day. His books have been, you know, game changers, super brilliant marketing mind, but really just an excellent writer. And you know, really, I just love the way he can condense these really high impact ideas in such a
three words.
Exactly. Like, he's just so succinct about it. Let's see. I mean, Jason Fried, you know, founder or co-founder of Basecamp. I've been really a fan of his thinking and his approach to building a business. I like that he thinks long term, and he thinks about building a business that's here to stay, not necessarily building a business to kind of flip, you know. Let's see. I mean, so many other names that I can run down a long list. I mean, one guy that just comes to mind here would be Rob Walling. He's the co-host of Startups for the Rest of Us podcast. He's currently the founder of the email marketing tool Drip. I've gotten to know him a bit, and he runs a conference that I attend. And following his story and the businesses that he's been running and growing has been really inspiring and educational. But even more than that, the community that he and Mike Tabor, the co-host of their podcast and the co-founder of MicroConf, they've built up this community of bootstrappers, online software bootstrapped entrepreneurs that I've become a part of. And that, just being a part of that, has been, you know, super influential for me. I mean, the list just goes on and on, but yeah.
And is there anyone you know personally who is currently doing remarkable work?
Yeah. So I get to meet at so many people doing productized services, obviously, because I teach on that subject. So I get a lot of people emailing me about things that they're working on, and the students that I've been working with, and seeing the kind of things that they've built and launched and things. So, I mean, I'm always very impressed when I see these productized services find success. Dan Norris, who's built WP Curve, is a pretty impressive guy. They've seen a pretty, you know, rocket ship growth over the last year or two with WP Curve, which is this done for you WordPress support service. What else? You know, the guys that are in my weekly mastermind, I guess I'll give them all a shout out here, because I am super impressed with the stuff that they've been doing. And again, I get inspiration from these guys. So I'm in this weekly group with three guys. Greg Hickman, he's the founder of Systemly, and they do done for you sales funnels on Infusionsoft. And again, it's like a productized service where it's super focused on that. Justin McGill is the founder of LeadFuse, and they offer done for you cold email outreach. So to help you kind of like generate leads for your business, they'll run these cold email campaigns for you. When I first saw that service, I thought it was brilliant, and they helped me out over the years. And now they have their own software for doing cold email outreach and prospecting and that sort of thing. I think that's really interesting. Rob Williams is the other guy in our group, and he's built up a service called Let's Workshop, and that's targeted at freelancers and consultants. So what they do is they go out on these job boards and they identify the high value projects that people or that businesses are hiring a freelancer for, and then they'll send those leads in a weekly or I think a daily email to all of their subscribers. So people pay, I think, like $69 or $99 a month, something like that, to be on this list and get a curated list of high value projects sent to their inbox every day. He's been doing really well with that service for a couple of years. So just, you know, being friends with these guys and hearing what they're doing to grow those businesses has been really impressive.
That's great. Hey, Brian, what are you working on now? What are you doing that's exciting?
Yeah, so let's see. We're recording this in December 2015. I'm working basically full time on audience ops. We launched that about 8 months ago, and it's been growing really like crazy this year. I've been really happy with that growth, and I'm working on, you know, we've got a team of about 10 or 11 people now. We're fully remote, so I'm constantly updating our systems and processes and bringing more people into the team and working on sales and marketing for that. This month, I'm working on the next update to the Productize course, which I had launched a little bit over a year ago. And that's been, you know, doing really well over the past year. So I wanted to give that a good update, especially to incorporate a lot of the new material that I've learned from building audience ops. And I'm adding a number of new case studies to that. So that's kind of what I'm focused on this month, and that stuff, and that'll be coming out in January. And then, as always, every week I also co-host a podcast called Bootstrapped Web with my friend Jordan Gal. He's another guy I get inspiration from as well. He's a good friend. He runs an excellent business called Cart Hook for e-commerce store owners. So he and I kind of catch up every week and talk about our businesses and record it and put it out on a podcast. So that's always fun.
Sounds good. How can listeners learn more about you?
Well, my site is castjam.com. And if you're interested at all in the productized services, I do have a free crash course there. It kind of, you know, distills a lot of the key lessons that I've learned about productized services into like a 5-day email course. You can check that out at castjam.com. There's a call out to it right on the homepage. I'm Castjam on Twitter, and yeah, that's about it.
That's great. All right, we'll include those in the show notes. So Brian, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a really interesting discussion about how do you take something that's been successful and scale it and find that niche. It's been a really remarkable discussion.
Great. Awesome. David, thanks for having me on. This is fun.
A pleasure. So my guest today has been Brian Castle. Brian is an entrepreneur who is focused on bootstrapping online businesses that combine software with productized services. Thanks again, Brian, for joining us.
Thanks.